From Loretto to Lebanon, Williamsport to Saxonburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, recent volatility in gas and energy prices has placed a renewed emphasis on the need for the United States to fully develop its energy resources. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And it was always a beautiful day in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, but Governor Shapiro's neighborhood is not so neighborly. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. State budget hearings are underway in Harrisburg, and a proposed 52% tax on skill games sparked debate at a hearing with Secretary of Revenue Pat Brown. The Shapiro administration has been advocating for enactment of the tax. Despite the fact it does not yet exist, revenue from the tax has been included in the administration's 2026-2027 budget proposal. Representative Jamie Barton of Schuylkill County pushed back on the proposed tax, saying the high rate would, quote, likely dampen the activity rather than set up the state to make money from it, end quote. The legislature has been grappling with the issue for several years now without coming to an agreement on whether or at what level to tax skill games. At least one Democratic governor gets it. Colorado Governor Jared Polis says opting his state into the new federal scholarship tax program is a, quote, no-brainer. The program would provide funding for enhanced school choice options for students and parents. However, a number of Democrat governors have caved to public school teacher unions and have not opted their states into the tax credit program. The Washington Post recently ran an editorial critical of the fact opting into the program has largely broken down along party lines. Governor Josh Shapiro, who typically does the bidding of teacher unions, has not yet announced whether or not Pennsylvania will opt into the program. The petition period for candidates to have their names appear on the May primary ballot ended this past week. Neither incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro nor his Republican challenger, State Treasurer Stacey Garrity, will face primary opposition. This, as the Post-Gazette reports, Shapiro is getting significant financial support from some of the most prominent billionaire donors in the country. Despite the fact the left likes to vilify the rich, Shapiro has raked in $500,000 from George Soros, and one of his super PACs gave another $1 million. California billionaire Jennifer Duda poured $3 million into the governor's reelection campaign, while former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg kicked in an eye-popping $4.5 million. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The recent wild swings in gasoline prices has once again placed a spotlight on the need for the United States to develop its own dependable sources of energy. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the show, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be back again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you.
Well, we sure do have exciting times to talk about. And since we last got to visit with the listeners, that the United States and Israel have launched a decapitation strike against the theological junta in Tehran. And even as we sit here, the allies continue to wipe out the Ayatollahs, their successors, Iranian generals and the religious vigilantes that have been terrorizing the populace there. Of course, when things happen in the Middle East is the great generator of much of the world's petroleum, people get concerned about the turmoil. And so there's been a lot of Sturm und Drang about what's going to happen with oil prices, what's going to happen with the cost of energy. And the good news is that we live in a different world now than in the 1970s.
Yeah, I was thinking about the economic conditions in the United States back in 1976, around that era, and jumping ahead 50 years now to 2026 and comparing. The big reason why there was so much difficulty in our country back in the 70s in terms of the economic impact of what turned out to be a gasoline and oil shortage or shortfall is that we had not opened up the resources that we've now since discovered in the United States. Many of those, a huge percentage of that, in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
So now when the nation gets drawn into a situation where perhaps there's an actual war going on or things of that nature that we're experiencing that aren't typical, instead of driving the costs for American citizens so high that people can't live and exist very comfortably, instead, we've got this buffer now. We've got this economic buffer that has geopolitical significance, and it protects Pennsylvania and the United States of America by making sure that we have stockpiled adequate access to the fuel that will keep our society going for as long as need be, whether it's 10 years or 50 years or 200 years, which in Pennsylvania, we have a natural gas supply that can last the next 200 years.
Yes, sir. And energy security is national security.
Well, Steve, I remember late 70s, early 80s, too. And I remember when people talked about energy independence as like a pie in the sky dream. You know, we really, really want to have energy independence. And everyone thought it wasn't possible back then. And here we are now today, where we do effectively have energy independence. And we produce more oil, I think, almost by twice than any other country in the world. And like you said, our natural gas resources, both in oil and natural gas by hydraulic fracturing, which has been perfected over the past couple of decades. So it really is exciting, and we are in a different place, that's for sure.
And also that the U.S. is now the world's number one exporter of liquefied natural gas. So whereas in the past we had been dependent in a significant way on inputs from those other countries, that's all been repolarized. And why? Exactly what you said, Rebecca. It's all about the breakthrough in technology pioneered by Americans, the combination of the hydraulic fracturing with horizontal drilling. And that was the real breakthrough. And so with these things combined, you have the massive deployment of American energy from the Bakken Shale in North Dakota, that's petroleum, and the Eagle Ford Shale in Texas, which is oil and natural gas, and of course the Marcellus play in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia, natural gas. And so when you think about President Trump's agenda of American energy dominance and the steps that he's taken since he returned to office just a little over a year ago, there's a big role for Pennsylvania to play. We are continuing to produce at the levels that we have been, but it's going to be really, really important for us to mobilize and really maximize domestic energy production in Pennsylvania, that even though we are the second largest producer of natural gas behind Texas, we are only at maybe a quarter or a third of what our maximum output could be. So for as big as Pennsylvania's energy economy is now, it could be like two or three times bigger.
Yeah, and we've seen, along with the growth you're talking about and the expansion of discovering the resources and where they are and how to get them extracted and properly utilized, the whole issue of the impact on the environment. It turns out that these fuels we're getting from Pennsylvania are primarily extremely clean fuels, making the environmental concerns that have been expressed in the past, they're taking the trends in the opposite direction. The air is getting cleaner in Pennsylvania and has been now for quite some time. And so we're in a situation where the environmental impact is positive, the resources are abundant and available. Really, the only thing standing in our way of continued success is government getting involved in a non-constructive way,
right,
which we've seen they're under pressure from time to time to impose, for example, ridiculous setback requirements that don't allow the facilities to be built really anywhere.
Right. And a carbon tax and the threat, the threat of new and additional taxes on top of the taxes that the energy companies already pay. And so it's like, you know, guys, let's don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Let's tend this garden and let's develop more of the positive economic dynamic that can come from energy production. Because, of course, Rebecca, as your members know well, energy is life, and that the energy for trucking, logistics, delivering goods to the marketplace, delivering industrial inputs to the factories to make those goods in the first place, when energy costs are affordable, all of that becomes more efficient, more economical, and that it makes everything, every other productive activity less expensive.
Right. Well, we talk about diesel fuel as being the heartbeat fuel for economic activity. It really is. And so, of course, trucks move the vast majority of the nation's freight, but there are actually a lot more industries that use diesel as well. So construction projects, food production, infrastructure building, even manufacturing in some cases, generators that use diesel. So there is a real, not just from trucking, but throughout the economy, there's a ripple effect when diesel is not readily available or affordable. So that ripples down through the economy. It eventually affects consumer prices. So we do have to be mindful of the fact that specifically diesel is very much integrated into the entire supply chain and throughout the economy. So we talk a lot about the availability and the price of diesel. We were talking about the wonderful energy development that we've seen in the United States that's insulated us from a lot of the volatility in the international level, but the fact of the matter is we still do react to energy price increases because it is a global commodity.
Right, of course.
So right now, of course, we're seeing cost increases in gasoline and diesel, but our members are very hopeful that it's a temporary situation and that we're looking at long-term stability in the energy markets internationally, and that will, of course, help all of us in the long run.
Yeah, and of course, the dictatorship, the junta in Tehran, the world's number one sponsor of international terrorism with Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis in Yemen and all that other evil business, that it looks like that dictatorship is in its final days. And when that regime either falls or is completely stripped of all military and industrial capacity, that's going to eliminate its ability to sponsor terrorist organizations, to incite the violence and the upset, the disruption, the conflict in the Middle East that has caused the uncertainty about the fate of the petroleum markets. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation.
For instance, the trucking industry, I can tell you, is used to managing fuel volatility. Back in 2022, we had some of the highest diesel rates ever in the trucking industry. We got through that period. Prices came down. In fact, the good news is that just throughout the past year, diesel prices have actually declined 50 cents to 75 cents per gallon. So that was as a result of some of the policy changes at the federal level. I know President Trump is focused on trying to make energy affordable for folks. So this sort of short-term volatility that we're seeing right now is after a sustained decrease in prices over time. So we're really hoping, like you said, that resolving some of that volatility in the international realm is really going to, over time, lead to longer-term stability in the region, which will mean more predictable energy supplies across the world, which will help maintain prices at a more stable level, even here in the U.S.
Yeah, and of course, as America becomes the number one, has become the number one producer of oil, the number one exporter of liquefied natural gas, that for those nations that are our customers, who are overwhelmingly our allies, that our shared economic and security concerns become more congruent. And, you know, you see those relationships coming closer with Japan and South Korea and Taiwan, but also with the European nations that are still trying to get off of buying energy from Vladimir Putin. And I may have told this story for the listeners before, but it's really important. I think it bears repeating. It was in, I guess, the fall of 2024. So, like, let's say, like 18 months ago. that the European Union ambassador to the United States was here in Harrisburg and had a meeting at the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And her number one ask was more American LNG for European markets. And she said that because the Americans harvest the natural gas and liquefy it cleaner than anybody else in the world, that they, the Europeans, viewed American LNG as being green energy. And so you think about that. You think about, again, the amazing superabundance of natural gas in Pennsylvania that is still untapped, that two-thirds to three-quarters that's still unused, and combine that with the idea of an LNG terminal on the Delaware River, and that there is private sector interest in doing that. But unfortunately, it's something that the governor hasn't shown any interest in, even though there's been really great preparatory work in the legislature that the task force headed by State Representative Martina White of Philadelphia. There's still great potential there for some Pennsylvania leader to help bring that into being so that we can be more directly involved with that industry, with helping America's balance of trade, with securing those relationships with our allies, defunding Vladimir Putin and his thug regime, all that stuff. There are really exciting opportunities, but as ever, Pennsylvania has to capitalize on them to make them real.
And the question gets raised is, what can we be doing here in Pennsylvania? How can we be making a difference? How can we actually be making the situation better for our own country, but really countries around the globe? And the first thing is that we need to make sure that the reflexive response of the political class toward opportunity for success is, can we tax it?
Yeah.
And so what we don't want to see is more unnecessary energy taxes imposed, more unnecessary regulations imposed on an industry that's already extremely regulated. And so we want to make sure that the focus, the things that are happening in Harrisburg, our state capital, are promoting affordability and reliability, not trying to restrict or crush this growing industry that's causing so much opportunity for so many people.
And that really, Steve, that is absolutely on target. And it's symptomatic of a larger problem with the every single leader in Pennsylvania, but overall with our leadership decision-making class, which is the private economy a garden to be tended or a beast of burden to be whipped? And we have a lot of people who want to crack the whip and who, if there's a native industry in Pennsylvania, that their instinct is to bleed it. And that's really, really, really unwise that we, as the listeners have heard me say many times, in a free country with a free economy, private sector investment decisions are voluntary, that the politicians in Harrisburg can't pass a bill requiring people to invest and locate and hire and operate and expand here in Pennsylvania. Like, we have to make it the smart business decision for people to want to do that. And then if we do that, we'll earn the investment and we'll earn then the prosperity and the dynamism and all the other things that we want for ourselves and our families and our communities. But I mean, it's on point. We need to have a pro-production consensus that this is good for Pennsylvania, that these are our native resources, that it makes good sense for us to mobilize them to the benefit of the whole economy.
That's exactly on point, because I will say a great example of that is diesel, because we have one of the highest diesel taxes in the entire nation here in Pennsylvania. So as I said, it's a heartbeat fuel for our economic activity. So we are one of the highest taxing states for that economic activity. And as we know from any Economics 101 class, if you want less of something, tax it more.
Truck fleets are interstate fleets.
Sure, they can choose where they set up business.
Over.
Absolutely. So that is exactly the point. And more trucking businesses we have here in Pennsylvania, the more trucking industry we have to support our current manufacturing base, our agriculture, and all of our economy here in Pennsylvania. So having high taxes actually chases them out of the state.
Well, and Rebecca, just while we're on the subject, real briefly, I wanted you to make mention of just something that civilians wouldn't know, that when it comes to diesel engines, it's not just the diesel fuel, that there's another input that's necessary for the proper operation of diesel engines.
Yes, it's DEF. And actually, a large percentage of that actually comes from the Middle East. So it is actually a really interesting point to make, is that we need to diversify our supply of DEF, which is required for any engine, any diesel engine made after 2010. So you got to add this to reduce pollutants that make it into the air. It's an after-treatment system that has made trucks incredibly clean, 99% less emissions than trucks in 20 or 30 years ago.
It's astonishing.
It's incredible. But it is an input that's required for diesel engines right now, and a lot of our DEF actually does come from the Middle East. So it's a good example of something that we have an opportunity here in the United States to diversify production of. So that's a great point to make. And I think it's something that it's an opportunity for us to try to diversify where we get our supply.
And it also speaks to the need for energy infrastructure, which we've discussed mostly in the sense of pipeline here in Pennsylvania, but also we need refineries.
Yes.
We need new refineries. There was the one in Philadelphia that there was an industrial accident, went up in smoke, and even though that had been the site of refining activity going back to the Civil War, that is now dormant. It's not coming back. And again, that diminishes our ability to distill those kinds of elements. We're down to the last of our time. It always goes too fast. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your shop and what you do?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
You can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. And as always, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. From Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
During a recent visit to Latrobe, hometown of the late Fred Rogers, I got to reminiscing about his iconic television program, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and how the Presbyterian minister was a soothing presence for generations of preschool children. His neighborhood was a welcoming place, reflective of the strong sense of community that characterizes southwestern Pennsylvania. Across the state, however, there is a neighborhood that is not so welcoming. Governor Josh Shapiro has become embroiled in an unseemly dispute with his next-door neighbors. The disagreement has boiled over into competing lawsuits, with the state's chief executive suing his neighbors, and they in turn suing him. It all started with last spring's firebombing of the governor's residence in Harrisburg by an anti-Semitic nutcase seeking to harm the governor and his family. Mercifully, the governor and his family escaped unharmed, but the residence was heavily damaged. That prompted a security review and the implementation of significant security upgrades to the governor's official residence. Governor Shapiro's private residence is in Montgomery County near Philadelphia. Taxpayer dollars have also financed over $1 million in security upgrades to his home. The expenditure of public dollars on an elected official's private residence is being questioned by state Senate Republicans, who are also concerned over the lack of transparency over spending at both properties. The governor, as he typically does, reacted angrily to having his actions questioned. Senators, however, are doing their jobs by asking for an accounting of spending on these projects. Further, the investment of over $1 million in a private residence when the state provides secure housing is a legitimate policy question. When Shapiro leaves office, the structural and landscaping improvements will remain, adding to the value of his personal residence. Those landscaping improvements are what have resulted in the dispute with Shapiro neighbors. There is disagreement over ownership of a strip of land bordering the two properties. The governor's neighbors claim they have been denied access to that property by state police while the issue is being litigated. As the governor fights to take his neighbor's property in Harrisburg, he is fighting to take more of yours. He has proposed a 2026-27 state budget that, if it wins legislative approval, would spend over $6 billion, that is billion with a B, more than the Commonwealth expects to receive in revenue. Such was the case in the current fiscal year, with a spending deficit papered over using budgetary gimmicks and rummaging through the couch cushions to find unexpended funds to close the gap. But those techniques have now been exhausted. So the governor is eyeing the state's rainy day fund. That fund of fiscal reserves was established for the express purpose of insulating the state budget from sudden, unexpected fiscal impacts. The willful overspending of state revenues does not fit that criteria. The governor is proposing essentially to drain the rainy day fund to cover the next fiscal year's budget deficit. The problem is, once those dollars are depleted, the unrealistically high spending levels will remain in place, absent the revenue to support them. Worse, Shapiro's revenue projections depend on funding sources that do not currently exist. He includes income from taxes on legalized recreational marijuana and taxes on skill games. Recreational marijuana is not currently legal in Pennsylvania, nor does it appear likely to be legalized in the near future. Lawmakers have been unable to come to an agreement on the taxing of skill games. Even if a tax is levied, its collection is not likely to materialize in the coming fiscal year. With the rainy day fund drained and higher spending levels remaining in place, residents in neighborhoods all across Penn's Woods are facing a massive tax hike. The Commonwealth Foundation estimates state taxes will need to be increased by an average of $1,900 per family of four to fund Governor Shapiro's spending going forward. This, however, is not a concern for the governor. He is seeking re-election this year and has his eye on a bid for the 2028 Democratic presidential nomination. He is more concerned with dishing out taxpayer dollars to key constituent groups than about a potential working family tax hike, which would land after those elections. Fortunately, Pennsylvania has a divided state legislature. Republicans control the state Senate and have forcefully stated they will not go along with the governor's budget proposal. Your ability to continue to afford living in your neighborhood depends on the success of their efforts. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. And if you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a few weeks away. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier grassroots activist event of the year. This year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be April 9th through 11th at the Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Chris Ruddy, the founder and CEO of the Newsmax Cable Television Network. Washington Examiner columnist and Fox News contributor Joe Concha will be the conference luncheon speaker. They will be joined by a wide array of speakers, panel presentations, and an expanded menu of workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now available at PennsylvaniaLeadershipConference.org. Join us for the conservative event of the year, the 2026 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. Again, registration is available at PALeadershipConference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.